You have a hefty amount of apples in a bowl right there.
Yeah.
How are you going to eat all those apples?
So guess what? The grinder that tried to take off my fingers, it attacked me again, like, destroyed a shirt. Like,
just fucking throw it away.
No, it's a good grinder.
Wait, it's clearly not. It's clearly out to kill you.
No, it was funny. I had a cutting disc, metal cutting disc on it. But what happened is the piece of metal I was cutting, I thought I had it well secured on both ends. I didn't, and it shifted ever so slightly in the vise, and it bound on the blade, exploded the blade, and the grinder spun out of my hand and boom, ran towards me. Luckily, I was wearing my leather apron. Unluckily, the leather apron had shifted to the side because I was standing at kind of a sideward angle so I wouldn't get sparks spraying onto my body while I was cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went right past my leather apron, bound up in the shirt, and I was just like, are you freaking kidding me? Didn't cut me or anything.
So minor, do you want to go with me suit shopping?
No, I was,
because I have a feeling we're going to be going to a funeral pretty soon. Yeah?
I'm just going to wear something casual.
Okay.
So, welcome to another episode of Damn Art Major.
That shit got stolen from you.
That's fine.
Where Adam rests his head on the table, Aaron annoys the neighbors, and I learn that my grinder is in fact possessed.
How did I annoy the neighbors?
I don't know. The episode hasn't happened yet. We'll find out.
No.
More so, the neighbors annoy Aaron.
Well, this is a different time slot for us. We're usually a Monday show, but here we are. Broadcasting on a Wednesday, recording on a Monday. Happy Labor Day to everyone. I hope you had a good one.
Hear that? We're working for you.
Yeah, yeah, man. Today was Labor of Love Day. You were in the shop all day. Right?
I was in the shop all day working on my my new bookshelves. Like, we can even put up a picture.
Ooh.
Yeah, because I take pictures of my work while I'm working.
Aaron, you were in the sweatshop all day.
Yes, I've been fucking melting all day. Coincidentally, the last time we recorded the podcast, episode 25, Dutters was melting because our AC was out, and it went out like 3 hours before we started recording our podcast. Sarah and I came home from a mini vacation, and our AC is out again, so I've been sweating profusely and dying slowly at home.
Nice. Yes. I have been having meetings with people about possible future projects, as well as working on a top secret project I can't even talk about on air because the parties involved may be listeners. So, yeah, there's a little crypticness for you. Labor Day! All right!
So, we are round three.
Round three of our Whatcha Drinking contest.
That's right. And for those of you who are just now joining us, thanks for listening. And the way this works is we put out a call and we got write-ins. And courtesy of Aaron's love note, we got a lot of write-ins.
We got some good write-ins this week.
So many write-ins, we're actually going to extend to a fourth round.
A fourth round.
But this is the third round.
Yep.
Not to get carried away here. So for round three, we have in the red corner, we have Buckshot from Natty Greens here in Greensboro, the Amber Ale. That is written in by Philip from the Facebook. In the black corner, because that's a thing now, we have Black Boss Porter from Poland. And that is written in by Sarah, also from the... Okay, they're all from the Facebook.
A local boy, an import, and what else?
And now we've got Rogue, the Hazelnut Brown Nectar Ale with natural hazelnut flavor, written in by Austin. Thanks for picking a beer that you can get in North Carolina, Austin. Unfortunately, we looked for the other one you wrote in, but they only distribute as far south as Danville, Virginia. Not driving to Danville.
So the way we do this is we all have our own separate glasses, and we are going to periodically throughout the show take a little bit of each one, sample it, write down our scale of 1 to 10, which one's our favorite ones, and then we will tally up the digits and we will declare the winner at the end of the show.
And the winner from this show will face off against the other winners from round one and two, and eventually round four. We will have the super smash-faced finale of the What You Drinking Damn Art Majors contest, where Aaron, Adam, and myself will get completely hammered drinking all of your favorite beers.
I agree. That's my only input on this.
The winner of today's episode will receive a sticker package featuring a couple Damn Art Major stickers, as well as an Oak City Hustle sticker.
And maybe some other small personalized item by us, with love.
That's Are you going to send another condom?
I didn't send a condom last time.
You sent a condom last.
I just sent the sperm.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Sorry. Now we got to pay for that. Thanks. All right, so...
It's McMahon's going to come on. Anyway.
Let's get ready to stumble!
So you guys got plugs this week? Anything new going on this week?
Well, Liberty Arts is gearing up for their Iron Pour in October. I don't have the exact date on me, but you can go to Liberty Arts Facebook page or libertyarts.org. I think it's .org.
I can't remember.
And check out what they got going on. But they've got their Iron Pour coming up. I think it's... If you want to participate, you can reach out to any number of the artists that work over there, and they will be doing workshops. Or you can...
It's liberty-arts.org.
And you can check out and see what they've got going on. They're always... Also, for any of you out there who you're sitting around one day and you're like, my life is terrible. I need to improve everything. And you want to take up some fun hobby like welding or plasma cutting or casting, head on over to Liberty Arts and sign up for one of their classes. They're cool people with cool stuff. And that makes cool stuff. That's really my only plug.
Nice.
Yeah.
OakCityHustle.com. They have just released their first zine.
I have no idea what that is, Adam.
It's a free, I believe it's free, local magazine, kind of highlighting some of the happening things happening around the triangle.
Why don't they call it a magazine, Adam?
Because it's hip. It's hip. It's full of color. It's full of art.
Why is a magazine called a magazine?
I have no idea.
Me either.
Anyway.
Fascinating.
You can find them in various establishments, Cup of Joe's, Raleigh Times, places like that. Pick one up. Check it out. Enjoy it, and I'm sure the guys at Oak City would love to know what you guys thought about it. And what else? I think we got... Oh, we got First Friday coming up downtown Raleigh this week. Art Space and various other art outlets.
So magazine is a derivative of an old Arabic word, mazin, which meant storehouse. It was translated to French. It became magasin. So there you go. Late 16th century.
Thank you, Aaron.
And magazines, they're typically monthly periodicals, yes?
Or weekly.
Weekly, monthly periodicals that one would purchase at a newsstand, per se?
Yes.
You know what else you can purchase at a newsstand? Things called comic books. So, it's actually been a very big week in the world of sequential art. There's been some real controversy as well as some giant landmarks. For instance... Did you hear the latest from eBay?
I did.
You did?
Uh-huh.
I think you told me about it.
Action Comics' first appearance of Superman has officially sold on eBay. This is a very special Action Comics. All of them are special, but this one particularly, because it was graded at a 9.0 from...
What does that grading mean?
The CGC. Grading is they take into account the condition of the comic, from everything from page qualities, rips, tears, rolled spines, to even the placement of the staples. To get a 9.0 or above is extremely rare. They then grade the comic, they seal it, and it is an airtight seal, cannot be opened unless you literally cut the plastic bubble form. That way, it will no longer disintegrate. It will no longer... I think there's UV on the plastic, it won't change the colors. This particular one, 9.0.
Yeah, I read somewhere that if even if you buy a brand new comic book off the shelf and it's in really good condition, I don't know the validity of this statement, but it kind of makes sense. As far as the strict guidelines go with the CGC... But if you buy a brand new comic book off the stands, and it's, you know, the placement of the staples is right, there's no tears or mashes or dents or folds in it, there's no mishaps in the printing, no offset colors or anything, you take it out of the plastic sleeve, you read it once, supposedly it already drops down to like a 9.6.
Sure. Because I could tell you, I mean, no matter how careful you are with that book, the paper is designed so that when you open it, it's going to leave a mark in the spine, usually. It's obvious when a book has been read, especially to a trained eye.
Yeah.
This particular book, you said that there was something about how it was preserved over, what, 60 years?
It was a matter of how it was preserved initially. A young guy bought it in, I think it was 1938.
I believe so.
Yeah, I remember there being something about he had the need to hide it after he read it.
Boy, you ain't buying, spending your milk money on them comic books, are you?
You're reading that fantasy shit again.
So he hid it in a large cedar chest that had some sort of like false bottom in it or some sort, where he kept other comic books. And so it laid basically at the bottom of a pile for 30, 40 years or so. Now, a cedar chest is, first off, cedar is a type of wood that inhibits moisture when it's in an enclosed environment, as well as a cedar chest will keep any UV light, moisture, I said moisture already, any UV light, dust, you know, whatever, tobacco, smoke, you know, whatever.
Pet hair.
Whatever shit can occur in a household that would be detrimental to paper, it'll keep it out of there, as well as bugs, because bugs hate cedar. You can buy the little cedar balls chips that you put in your...
That's right.
And that's why you should be careful. If you're a woodworker and you work with cedar, wear a respirator, because mm-hmm. that dust will get in your lungs and irritate it. It'll feel like you've got walking pneumonia.
Yeah, so we basically put this thing in a...
safety first.
Hermetically sealed time capsule, for more or less. And it was there for like 40 years, I think, 30 or 40 years. He then went back to the cedar chest, remembered it was there, and... decided to see how much it was worth, because Superman had become popular by the 70s or late 60s. He approached a guy to have it appraised. It was appraised at like several hundred thousand dollars, I think. He sold it. That guy realized the value, went the extra measure to get it encased in something. I think he kept it in like a suitcase or a vault for another 20 or so years. Then it was sold to the guy that owns it now, or that just recently owned it. And he was practically the head of this really high-end comic store in whatever state in the U.S. And then he puts it up for auction on eBay, with some of the proceeds going to the Christopher Reeves and his wife, I'm blanking on her name, Mary, maybe? I don't know.
Beach, mate.
Martha? I don't know. Lois. There we go with that. the Christopher Reeves and his wife's foundation for quadriplegia.
So 48 people placed bids on the item over the course of the sale. The winning bid, Aaron, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
$3,207,852. And here I was, I stopped at 51.
I wonder if somebody lost by $2.
I feel like this like just auction tax that was tacked on afterwards that he had to pay for something. I guess eBay auctions, they don't have like you must go up by these sort of increments.
When you get to a certain price, if you sell anything over six, I know in the state of North Carolina, if you make $600 in a lottery or something of that, you know, even a yard sale in a day, you have to pay the tax on it. So I'm sure there was taxes involved. eBay also got their cut of it, and I know eBay went over and beyond to help get the publicity for this, because it's big for eBay. They get a portion of the sales, as well as the advertising and getting people to come and, you know, check out the auction.
Any auction you go to, the auction house takes what, like 30% or probably.
Well,
more.
In this situation, it's such a high dollar item. I mean, I'm sure eBay took a cut of some sort.
Or even if they took like 5%, they made bank.
Yeah, but it's also got some aspect of it going to charity, and they use it as a promotional point. Like when you looked at the auction page for this, it was very specialized. It might as well have been its own website.
Right.
When you look at it, it was dedicated to the comic book and the sale and the story, the provenance of this particular comic book. There was like a video testimonial by the guy that owned it. And there were very few links as far as like eBay ads or there was definitely nothing that was like, you know.
You like Action Comics?
Yeah.
You like DC Comic number 23!
Yeah, you might like these items, and there's like 50 useless shit items that are scrolling across the bottom.
Here's some red underwear from Hanes.
Yeah.
We support you.
What's crazy about this is there's only like 50 of these Action Comics number one featuring the first appearance of Superman. There's only like 50 of these that are worth, that are even considered in good condition and that the CGC will even recognize or attempt to put a value on.
It says that there are 50 original Action Comic number ones that have not been restored. So there are more than 50, but they've been tampered with, you know, by collectors and people who are trying to preserve it.
Like I saw one on eBay the other day that sold for $170.
I'm sure that was like a reprinting from the...
No, it was original. It was just in really shit shape.
I mean, I'm sure the kid who got that one sat there and like folded it in half, stuck it in his back pocket. Rode to school with it, you know, pulled it out. Hey, guys, look at this cool comic book I've got. Yeah, awesome. Sweet.
Look on page two where somebody drew titties on Superman.
See, and the point that, you know, I was making when we kind of discussed this before the show was that I'm going to pull the indie card here, the Indiana Jones card, and say, it belongs in a museum. Action Comics number one is more than a mere collectible. It is part of Americana. It is a icon of this country. Sequential art, comic book form, is a very true American art form. And I believe that book itself should be viewed in a museum setting. In the Smithsonian, I believe they may have an issue, but it's not even anywhere near the quality of this particular one. I just feel like it's kind of a waste when it's just sitting in glass in someone's office. How do you guys feel about that?
I disagree with you. I don't think it belongs in a museum. And I say that because of the price tag on it. I say that because it's a comic book. On the eBay page itself, there was... You could read the entire comic book. I did. I sat down and I read the entire thing. I mean, it was like, 20 pages or something. And there's maybe a sentence per frame. There's not a lot to it.
Could you buy, like, x-ray glasses on the back page?
I don't remember. I don't remember what the ads were. But it had every single page showcased so that you could see just how good of quality it was. So, in that same vein, this comic has been redistributed. It's been reprinted. It's been renovated. It's been completely really illustrated and published.
Right.
So there's many different versions of it that you can go out and you can read.
Well, the Mona Lisa has been slapped on posters and distributed worldwide. Why? But yet we still hold it in a museum.
Yeah, there's only one of them.
Right. Well, there's only one 9.0 graded Action Comics number one.
Yeah, but when it's in a museum, what are you going to see? The front cover?
Well, yeah, and for some people, that's all they need to see. And if they want to read the interior, they can always get a trade paperback.
You can go to your gift shop and find a reproduction print for $12. Thanks for shopping at our museum.
In that vein, it's not a work of fine art. It's a work of...
Oh, you're one of them people, aren't you?
No, I'm not going that vein entirely. It's not a work of fine art. It's not a one-off. Yeah, it is the only one that exists in that good of shape, but you know how many 1970 whatever barracudas are there out there that are in perfect shape? So with
Shelby Cobras,
with this comic book in particular, it has just as much hold. Okay, if you were to look at the Mona Lisa as it pertains to the fine art world, it is like the creme de la creme or whatever. I would argue that, but we'll just say it's the most famous piece of art. When you look at the comic book world, this is the most famous comic book.
Right.
In DC. But you can get it anywhere. You can go to a torrent website and download the comic in its entirety in, you know, 1200 by 2000 pixels.
I mean, you said they've already got one in a museum.
I can only assume they probably have one in the...
I mean, my thing is, that's one of those where, if say you go to a comic book museum or something, or you go to the Smithsonian, it doesn't matter the grade of the one they've got, because really the people that are going to go there, they're going to look at it and go, that's really cool. And then they're just going to do what you said. They're just going to go on the internet and thumb through the PDFs.
Yeah.
That's going to be more of an enjoyment than looking at the highest graded one. Because to the layman, I probably couldn't tell the difference between a 9.0 and a 8.5.
It is mass produced. And I really don't think any museum in the world would pay that much money for it. They wouldn't pay what it's worth. I mean, yeah, the guy that owns it, whoever, whatever an anonymous buyer just recently bought it, he could gift it to a museum on loan, and the museum would have to, you know, put forth the extra effort to make this thing basically encapsulated in...
The insurance alone that the museum would have to put up to cover this thing...
Be $3 million.
It would probably bankrupt the museum. So the poor museum would sit there and be like, that's amazing. Thanks for donating it to us, you asshole. Now we have to insure this. Like, I think it'd be too much trouble for what it's... it'd be too much trouble. Not for what it's worth, but it would be too much trouble for a museum, which right now museums are, you know, they can barely get people in the door. So, and I don't think this comic book would be a big enough draw to get people through the door.
Yeah, and if you look at what books are in museums on display, there's only one of them. And it's of such a historic importance that it's in a totally different realm than Action Comics number one, which you can get on the internet. You can go and buy a reissue of it.
Are you talking about the Bible?
No. I'm talking about the Devil's Bible, which is...
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a... God, what the hell? It's such a crazy story. It's like a 1,000 or so page tome that weighs like 200 pounds. It was handwritten by one person over the span of their entire life.
And so it's practically my sketchbook.
Yeah, right?
And it's like the most crazy Bible ever written, but it's got like this whole focus on not sorcery, but holistic medicines and the devil.
So basically it's the Bible written with footnotes?
No, it's a lot
more. I haven't actually, it's one of those, you know, oh, you're scrolling through the internet. Oh, look at that little thing. Click on it and go, anyway, it's this, next page.
It's this book that was written during the Middle Ages, or maybe it was the medieval time period. Every single page of this book is basically an illuminated manuscript. So there's like, when a paragraph starts, there's this giant ornate P, for example, and there's like, you know, something that would take you 18 hours to draw back in those days. So there's 1,000 pages of this, which took this guy 60 years to write. There's so much value behind that it becomes priceless. Whereas Action Comics number one, say that book died in a fire. There's another one out there that's like maybe an 8 or something.
Right. There you go. Some point and counterpoint on this comic controversy. You know, kind of continuing the conversation on comics. And yes, I know, this has turned into an episode of No Big Two Comic Review.
Sorry.
It's not. Sorry. If you'd like to check out No Big Two Comic Review, go ahead and go on Podomatic and you can find it there. All right. It has, like I said, been a very controversial week in comics. Partly due to Marvel Comics had commissioned an Italian artist, Milo Manara, to do the cover of a new Spider-Woman issue. Everybody's favorite Spider-Lady, Spider-Woman. The problem with having...
There's more than one Spider-Female?
There's Spider-Girl. That's one of those episodes. Yeah, sorry.
I know nothing about Spider-Woman or Spider-Girl. Yeah,
honestly, I don't either. But the problem with Manera and doing this cover is that his background is actually in adult pornographic comics. And so he's been doing that for probably decades. And, well, old habits die hard.
Now, is he a...
But it's... Art.
Is he a professional pornographic artist?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so here we got Spider-Woman kind of in the on all fours scaling a building with her buttocks kind of all exposed. That's not how clothes work, is it, Aaron? It looks like body paint.
If she wasn't on all fours on the edge of a building, say she was her say her hands were on a carpeted floor,
sure,
and her feet were on a wall, she would be twerking.
Yeah, she totally twerking position.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like she is trying her hardest to fart away New York City in its entirety.
Now, one would call you a spider expert. They would. You are, in fact, the host of Spider Facts, a segment that we all know and love. Is this a typical position you'd find a spider in?
Absolutely.
Why the heck is she going to go fighting crime with body paint on? Because that's what it looks like. There ain't no spandex on Earth that conforms to your body that tight.
That's true. There's no wrinkles in that suit whatsoever.
Nope. No, that's straight up, like, painted on.
She's wearing a mask and only a mask.
Well, yeah, I mean, it pretty much looks like he drew the nude figure.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Yeah, sure. Under drawing. And then he got that far and he was like, no, this is good. And then he sent it off to the color. And the guy doing the color was like, dude, you didn't, like... There's no suit on her. He's like, no, just color it.
Well, here's the thing. Do not Google his other work if you are, in fact, on a company computer. Because it is by far definitely not safe for work. My real, I mean, other than the obvious issues with
the objectification of the female body.
Right. Look at the nose, man. What is going on? Her nose is like a third the size it should be. What's going on there?
This is the kind of comic book cover you have to take at ass value.
What do you think a 9.0 of this cover would go for? How many millions?
I'm going to say it's a 9.0 on the Richter scale, the fart that she's building up.
She's probably going to spin a web, right?
She's going to shoot something out of there. It's probably
the perspective of the buildings is pretty weak.
I think, honestly, you're spending way too much time trying to break this down. Honestly, all it is Marvel knew what they were doing.
Do you think?
They straight up were like, we need to just hire some clown to put some TNA on one of our covers. So we can just throw this out there, and we're going to get people just walking into the comic book shop going, hey, look at that, who don't know anything about art or any, you know, they're just going to be like, yeah, sure, I'll just buy it for the shock value.
Right.
And I bet this thing flew off the shelves.
Oh, I don't believe it came out yet.
Yeah, I think they're actually redoing the cover, aren't they?
I would kind of think at this point they would kind of have to, but again, they'll probably come out with a variant. One out of every 25 will have that cover on it, and it'll be gangbusters. This is how the comic industry works. I'm sorry.
It'll be Brazzers.
Yeah,
that's the worst comic book cover I've ever seen.
That's pretty bad.
Even worse than the stuff that Rob Liefeld does.
Yeah.
Is that the guy that overdoes the muscles?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't draw feet.
Yeah,
it's like
they have like 1,500 muscles between their neck and their shoulder.
Yeah, Captain America has like 97 abs. Well, no, he has 51 abs, one for every state.
America.
Wait, did you include Puerto Rico on his abs?
I don't include Puerto Rico in anything. Sorry, guys.
Then who's the 51st?
I don't know.
Canada.
Pick one. Delaware. Even though it's the first. I don't know what to say about that. Like, what the hell was he thinking? I mean, if he's a fan of comic books at all, he knows that there's a taste factor. And you can't just find an image of a naked woman, paint it in a different color, and expect it to fly.
My problem is, I don't even think that doesn't even look like anything off a life model.
That is not a very natural pose at all, no.
If she's a jumping spider, it is.
Of the three of us here, I'm the least likely to pick up a comic book. And I think if I walked in and I saw that and I had any morality whatsoever, I'd probably turn around and walk out of the comic book shop. I'd be like, that's it, I'm done.
Really? That's where you draw the line? You're like, eh.
I
did not expect this smut in a place like this.
Do you guys remember, I guess it was the MTV Music Video Awards back in the 90s where, what is the radio personality? Howard Stern went on as Fart Man.
Yes.
She looks like Fart Woman.
Maybe she has a new movie coming out called Spider-Woman's Private Parts.
I'm serious. I mean, it looks like the same costume he was wearing.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Check out Fart Man.
Yeah.
Listeners.
Or you can check out Howard Stern now on, what is it, The Voice or something like that? He's on America's Got Talent?
I should also say that I hate Howard Stern.
You better not hate Howard Stern. If it wasn't for Howard Stern, we wouldn't have a show like this these days.
I hate Howard Stern.
You're wrong. Anyway, so
we can Twitter, hey, at Howard Stern, you suck. Thanks, though.
See, but I don't agree.
Bring back Fart Man. Ooh, it was the only thing you've ever done that was good. What was the next thing you were going to say?
No.
Sorry. I know your love for Howard Stern is
great. Here's the thing. is Howard Stern is more of an appreciation. I'm not an avid listener.
I can honestly say I've listened to about 5 minutes of one of his shows.
Really?
Yeah, I've never really...
See, growing up, though, riding in the car with both my father and stepfather, like, they both were avid Howard fans back in the 90s. I don't know, I got entranced by it. It was interesting because it was very much similar to what we now deem podcasts in that sense of, like, you know, weekly, daily talk radio. And it kind of reinvented how we communicate over broadcasts. He obviously, you know, pushed the boundaries and there was a lot of shock value, but there's also a lot of heart to the Howard Stern show. And, you know, when I talk to people about Howard Stern, they always compare him almost in like decades or every 5 years or something, because every so often he kind of reinvents his show. And as he progresses as a human being, he takes his show with him and it evolves the show.
But misogyny is a constant theme.
I would find that the later episodes, probably in the last 5-10 years since he switched to XM.
No way. Dude, he had fucking George Takei on there like 5 years ago and convinced him to go jack a dude off after he got married.
I got nothing to say. I don't know. I don't know. if that's true, then I mean, is that misogynistic?
No, I'm just saying that he has such a focus on this like extreme sexuality in his show that it becomes off-putting.
Right.
Like, the things that I've seen Howard Stern do outside of his own radio show have been okay, and I've been slightly appreciative of some of them. Like, what he does on, what is it, America's Got Talent, or
yeah,
You Can Sing in America, or whatever the damn show is. He gives genuine input to that, and he's very nice and controlled. But every time I ever see him put on a set of headphones and put a mic in front of his face in his own studio, he's a complete and utter dick. Especially
part of that is a character.
He's got a whole cast of clowns with him too.
Yeah,
I mean, I that's the thing is the brief. Like,
I think they're the only.
I think it was probably maybe more than 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes of his show, and I didn't find anything in that show that made me want to continue listening. Like, there was no draw. I mean, I could understand. It's kind of like, it'd be like watching a train wreck where you're just like, this is the most horrific thing I've ever seen. I should probably do something when it's done bursting into flame. that is the only redeeming factor I found in the brief moment that it entered into my ear canals and penetrated into my brain.
Well, I can only suggest that you give a couple more episodes a listen and you kind of get past the obvious shock value that he's known for. And you'll find that his interview techniques, his characters, his clowns, as you put it, they actually start to get a little... You start to see the heart in the show. You start to empathize with him, and he really puts himself out there as an individual.
Maybe I've only seen the over-sexualized aspect.
Sure, and that's, you know, obviously face value.
I mean,
but the more you listen to, you start to kind of you go deeper into the show and these people. You know,
well, he does what? How many shares does he do a week?
You know, in all honesty, since he switched to SiriusXM, I can't say.
I mean, let's say, I mean, if he's
it doesn't matter. He's been on the radio for 25
years. Yeah,
right.
And so, let's say he's done. So he's done thousands upon thousands of episodes. If he does, I mean, the thing is, I have no doubt that there is a gem every 110 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go every 110 episodes, you find that one episode where you're like, man, that he actually said something worth listening to. The problem is you've waded through 110 episodes up to your knees of stuff that's just not, that quite possibly is not worth your time. And I think if you really, I mean, he's created a persona for himself. Like, I mean, sure. I know very little about the guy. But when someone says Howard Stern, I associate him with basically smut radio. Like, that's what I think. I just think over-sexualized smut radio. That's what it is.
That's the word I was trying to think of, was smutty.
And that's the first thing that pops in my mind when I hear Howard Stern. And I've never had a desire to go beyond that, to turn it on and listen to an episode. And I feel like if he really cared that much about being more than that, then there would be more. I would hear more about it. I wouldn't just associate him with that.
Go check out Fart Man.
So let's go ahead and tally up our votes here. I think we've all finished up our drinking. Aaron, you got one more?
Yeah.
Chug! We're trying this new format out, folks, where we're going to try and keep it short.
We're going to keep them a little shorter, a little tighter, a little
cleaner.
Yeah.
A little neater, so that way you can listen to us in that horrible commute that you've got to work. You can take us into the bathroom for that 40-minute, you know, escape.
We are cutting out all of my smut, because I know we spend a good 30 minutes of me just ranting about the sexual things I like to discuss. But we're cutting all that out. No more of that.
And this is the part where we're going to bring in our half-naked female guest. Welcome, Spider-Woman.
How are you today? Thwip.
We'd like to thank Bansky for painting her suit on today.
All right, so let's tally up these votes. What do we got? Hold on.
All right, we have finished doing math. I am now bleeding from the eye sockets.
I'm helping him bleed.
Adam, what are the scores? What are the scores?
You want to know the scores?
I want to know the scores.
All right. In third place, with a score of 16, we have Buckshot. In second place, with a score of 21, we have Rogue.
Oh.
Actually, I voted Rogue as my number one, believe it or not. And in that means
our
number
winner.
One is Black Boss with a score of 24. So it's pretty close between Black Boss and Rogue.
I'm a little biased on the Black Boss. That's one of my favorites.
I found that the aftertaste was that of a mild beef jerky.
I think you're stupid, so.
there's a lot of other beers that
have
a more smoky meat flavor to them than that.
Actually, Rogue makes one that has bacon in it. If you want a smoky meat flavor aftertaste, it's in a pink bottle.
There's a lot of Belgian beers
yeah.
That are specifically brewed to taste meaty.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, there's one that I'm thinking about from Finland called Korpisavu. Which means something like smoked meat beer. And it's bizarre when you try it, because it tastes literally like a steak.
That's really bizarre.
I think this is the only beer I've ever had from Poland.
If I could find it here in the States, I'd be all over it, because it's actually a really good beer. It's made by Karhu, which is like their version of, I think, it's like their domestic beer of choice, and you can't get it anywhere else.
Well, congratulations goes out to Sarah. We will be sending you a sticker prize package, and your beer will go up against the other three winners of the What You Drinkin' contest. The final winner...
The Smashdown!
Nice. The finale winner will receive a prize package, including a t-shirt from Oak City Hustle.
That is a medium! So if you're bigger than that, you're shit out of luck!
Look, all I got is a medium. Anyway... you know, and
you
a couple
just
other
cut
things.
The sides up and you know wear it like a poncho or something.
We got some other goodies to throw in there as well. On that note,
hey y'all, I'm Paula Dean. The next one will be butter.
Oh.